The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. It was the second day of the NATO summit conference in Brussels, Belgium. President Gerald Ford had just arrived at the airport. I'd been there on the spot to do a program for the World Tomorrow and also to listen to Gerald Ford's opening remarks at the airport in Brussels, Belgium. On that very same day, I'd been granted an interview with the Secretary General of NATO, and this was unique in the sense that even some of the major networks have not managed to get that interview, but the remarks that were given later on in a press conference that was attended by about 400 of the world press, including even the Soviet agency TASS, was the only public statement made by that gentleman who gave the World Tomorrow an exclusive interview on that very same day. The second day of NATO summit conference, I was able to have an interview in private with the Belgian Prime Minister. Leo Tindemans had just returned from a visit to Communist China, where he had talked to Chinese leaders and had been told that the Chinese were in favor of the Europeans strengthening their defense, but not of dependency upon U.S. arms. Obviously, they would hope that the Russians would continue to keep a number of divisions lined up in opposition to NATO forces, or at least to European forces, hoping that Europe eventually would pull out of any dependency upon the United States. Mr. Tindemans has been privately criticized a great deal by the Belgian opposition and in the Belgian press for traveling so extensively. But the purpose for his travels is simply because he has been commissioned to present a report to the prime ministers of all of the NATO countries and all of European countries on the possibility of moving toward a united Europe. And of course, that is very important when you look at the very weak southeastern flank of NATO, the new government in Portugal possibly drifting toward a left-wing dictatorship, and all the other assorted problems of trying to find a standard defense flanker for NATO, which at the time of my visit to Belgium was still open for decision. And Prime Minister Leo Tindemans, whom you will hear in just a few moments, was very, very instrumental in making that final decision. I take you now to the headquarters of NATO in an interview with the Prime Minister of Belgium, Mr. Leo Tindemans. Mr. Prime Minister, in opening remarks yesterday at the NATO summit conference, you expressed hope for progress toward a European unification. Has there been any substantial progress in this direction?
Let me say that we are still working in Europe on the basis of the Treaty of Rome and the Treaty of Paris for the Coal and Steel Authority. You know that we have now conferences at the summit baptized European Union, and at one of these summits in the month of December 74, I was charged with making a report on the future of Europe. What does it mean to make a European Union? You know, in the 50s, European political leaders were always speaking of community, a community, an economic community, a political community. In the 60s, it was a political union. Now it's a European Union. What is it exactly? What does it mean? I have to make a report to define the European Union. But for the moment, I think with the economic difficulties, the crisis and so on, the energy crisis, I think Europe is not in a good shape. We don't know exactly for the moment what we want. So there is a need for more thinking and for a discussion about the future of Europe. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's mentioned, and you read just a few phrases in order to draw attention upon these aspects. I think we must know in Europe what we want together. And even within the framework of NATO, we will be stronger and unity will be much more consolidated if we in Europe know exactly what we want. Just how much are you prepared to say in advance of the release of your report to the heads of state? It's difficult for the moment. I'm just like that novelist that said my novel is made, I have just to write it. It's not yet prepared. I have to do that work and to write it. Because in Paris, they asked me to make that report on the basis of three other ones. The Court of Justice, Parliament and the Commission in Europe have to make also a report on the basis of these three and of hearings I have to organize in the different capitals. I have to make my own report and to express my own very personal view, having hurt all these people. I have visited for the moment two capitals, and the other ones will be visited in the month of June and the month of July. It's very interesting for me to hear that how political leaders, trade union leaders, leaders of employers' organizations, of farmers' organizations, of women's organizations, how they think about Europe. And I think that the political leaders in the future will have to take into account what these people are thinking for the moment of Europe. They are ahead of their own governments and their own political parties. That is what I found already in two capitals.
I'd like to point up a problem which is obviously common to many European countries, yours in particular, Belgium, and that is runaway inflation and increasing unemployment as viewed by the potential of a new Arab oil embargo. Now, as we know, the southern flank of NATO is its weakest point with Greece and Turkey, the problems there, and of course, NATO is not equipped really to deal with the Middle East. Now, should there come renewed hostilities and a resultant energy crisis, which would further really impact the economies of Europe, what do you feel would be the European response?
Of course, I think one of the biggest dangers for Europe, for the whole Western world, but especially for Europe, is a new possible oil crisis. Our economy is based upon oil, as you know, and if there is a raise in prices or there is a boycott of supplying oil and so on, we will be in a very, very difficult situation, that's clear. One of the weak points of Europe is that we don't have a common energy policy for the moment. We had several discussions in 1974, and on the month of February, Secretary of State Kissinger made proposals, then the European Commission made proposals, France made proposals, but we didn't attain a common agreement on a common attitude here. It's a very weak point in the actual crisis, I think. On the other hand, I regret that Europe isn't playing a bigger part in the Middle East crisis. I think we are in a good situation to make eventually new proposals or to restore equilibrium in the Middle East. The Common Market signed a preferential agreement with Israel in the month of May, and I think similar agreements will be signed in the next month with Arab states. On the other hand, we did a big effort in favor of some of these states. The Maghreb states have already special ties with the common market. So we are in a very good position. Why didn't we do it? Well, it's always the same difficulty. We haven't a political unification. We haven't not a single voice in world politics, and that the weakness of Europe, I think.
Some have called Europe an economic giant, but a political dwarf. Do you think that that is an apt analogy?
No, it's a good formula. It's not used for the first time. You know, it was said of Western Germany not so long ago. But when we are working for the moment in favor of a bigger political unity in Europe, you see why far we are doing it, because if we haven't that voice and the common attitude and an idea about some of the world problems, we will have no significance in this world.
You have mentioned many times Mr. Kennedy's, former President Kennedy's, stress on equal partnership between Europe and the United States, and you talked of mutual obligations, obviously referring ecology, food and population, crime, all of the problems, domestic or geopolitical, of the world. But wouldn't this also, a necessity, have to include a third nuclear power?
Well, I like very much that formula used by President Kennedy. I was in the United States at that moment, and I found it always the most beautiful political idea I heard in order to define the best relationship or relationship between the United States and Europe. Equal partnership. You know, we are still in search of that formula. You can read in every review about international politics what are the relations between the United States and Europe and how can they develop, must they develop. I think for a small country like Belgium, the best one is still equal partnership. But with the evolution in Europe, with the attitude of some countries like, let me say, France or Great Britain or Western Germany and so on, and the development of the United States, we don't know exactly for the moment what we want. Well, I had the courage yesterday to say, for me, for Belgium, equal partnership is still the best one. That means that Europe has to develop. You know, there is now and then an opposition in Europe against the United States, or some political leaders think that they can stress, that they can put the stress on European unity by opposing themselves to the United States. It's not my opinion. We think in Europe that we can have and an Atlantic alliance and more European unification. So, nuclear power is one of these very big problems in the defense system. Shall we have in Europe an own nuclear capability, a defense system based on nuclear arms? Not for the moment. It's a very difficult problem. And let me say that the smaller countries in Europe were always, may I say, happy. It's a queer expression when speaking of defense, but we liked to be protected by the American umbrella. Now, with the evolution in Southeast Asia and other defense problems in Europe, some voices are speaking of the credibility of that American protection and are working in favor of an own European nuclear defense. I think for the moment we don't like that, but how it will be put, how it will be seen in future, I don't know for the moment. It's more a question of cooperation between Great Britain, between France, because they have a certain nuclear defense, as you know. But for the moment, we, and in general, we prefer to have that American umbrella.
In the event of a growing nuclear Europe, would there not be of necessity other nations in Europe who would have to join what we call the nuclear club and manufacture their own nuclear weapons?
You know, it's not a good thing in itself when we spread nuclear arms or the nuclear defense system, and when it is done or owned by several countries, it's a greater danger for peace in the world. All political leaders in the world are not wise men, so we can have an accident sooner or later. I think we must put these arms together as much as possible, and there is an international agreement on spreading nuclear weapons, as you know, in order to avoid an eventual accident in that so dangerous field. Could the French and the British decide to put these arms together? In itself, it would be a good thing, I think. But on the other hand, I must repeat it, the smaller countries in Europe have still confidence in the American nuclear umbrella.
You are listening to the voice of the Prime Minister of Belgium, Leo Tindemans, interviewed during the NATO summit conference in Brussels. This is Garner Ted Armstrong on the World Tomorrow program. Now, back to the interview.
Mr. Tindemans, in your opening remarks at the NATO summit conference, you mentioned the need for creating a climate in which we can tackle and overcome the main problems confronting humanity together. And you stressed the need for a united Europe. Now, obviously, the main problems confronting humanity are seemingly insoluble. They are manifold, such as food and population, the deep inflation of many countries in Europe, the joblessness which afflicts the United States as well as Belgium. Would you like to address yourself to the form of tackling some of these problems in any united sense? We might view it from the microcosm of your country, of Belgium, or of Europe. The really big problems confronting us right now today are economic, even more so than political, it would seem.
So this is a big problems. I could have energy and environment and so on, and I was very glad to hear that even President Ford in his speech yesterday mentioned these problems. Yes, we are in a difficult situation here in Western Europe and also in Belgium. We considered in the past Belgium as a little paradise, but for the moment we have problems. Inflation, unemployment of youngsters are problems we have to fight for the moment, and it's not easy because Belgium is a very open country. you are exporting more than 40% of what we produce in this country. So if there's a recession in other countries, they don't buy in Belgium, and we have unemployment in Belgium. We are living off world economy. If world economy is in a bad shape, we are victims here in this country. I think these are the big problems, as you said, population, food, energy, environment, crimes in the world, difficulties with youngsters. They don't find their real place in this world, and they have difficulties to adapt themselves, I think. And we should all work together, I think, to solve this problem, to find solutions. It must be possible to do it. One of my fears is that we would go back to a situation just as it existed before the war, between, let me say, 32 and 38 or 39, with autarky, with economic crisis, with unemployment, and with no view on the future. One of the reasons why I am in favor of a united Europe or a more united Europe is that we have to give an ideal to the young people in politics. What are we working for? What is the world we have to propose to them? And we think in that field we could do something, and we could give another face, here in Europe at least, to the world we want to create. That's the reason why I was so glad that President Ford spoke of these problems, and I myself, in a very discreet way, mentioned them, just as you read now that paragraph.
You have mentioned several times young people, and in your speech yesterday you mentioned this vital interest must be shown to be relevant to the future so that it evokes a response in young people. Do you have, similar to the United States, quite a problem with youthful crime, vandalism, what we call juvenile delinquency in Belgium?
Well, we must be careful, but what we are reading in the newspapers here and what we see at television is, of course, all these incidents with young people at universities, in the streets, violence and these things. And I'm not a psychologist by profession, but I think one of the reasons is that these young people, as I said to you already, don't find their own place in this world, or are afraid a little bit that for them there is not a good place, they have no future, or they don't see it. So we have to tell them what they can do and how we conceive that world, so that there is a place for them, a future for them, so that they can work not only for the development of that world, but for their own future. And I think if they have that security, we would already have more peace between them.
Turning back to NATO again for a moment, President Ford has delivered his preliminary address now. It was released yesterday, I understand, about 4 pages in length, during which time he was reaffirming that even though there are ups and downs, setbacks and reversals inside the American country, that we are nevertheless a strong people, and he reaffirmed our commitment to NATO. How do you feel his words were received by the assembled prime ministers?
I think they were very, very well received. It was a good speech, full of ideas, and believe me, I don't say that to flatter him or the United States. I had to tell the press afterwards what he said exactly, because he accepted to release his speech to the journalist. I could tell it at television here in Belgium, and I said the 6 points he mentioned were very interesting, and I think today we will have a very good discussion about these points. Given the void, the difficulties, he said, well, we have to do this, we have to strengthen the democratic institutions, we have to strengthen the alliance, we must examine our relations between ourselves and with other states eventually, and so on. I think it was a very good speech.
Perhaps I'm asking you a little more of a personal question. What is your personal impression of Gerald Ford? Do you feel that he is a strong man, a strong president? Many are calling him a weak president merely because he was not elected to the normal procedures.
It's the first time I met him. I saw him at the Royal Palace when he arrived on Wednesday night. We had a discussion yesterday. I heard him at the meeting of NATO. I must say he made a very good impression as an open-minded, simple, very objective statesman. Of course, your system of elections Your presidential system is another one. It's not known in my country nor in Europe, I think. Only the French have a kind of presidential system, but not exactly the same as the one you have in the United States. But the impression you made here, and I heard it from several colleagues, the impression was a very good one.
The point is brought up time and again that the United States presently exists under what they call a weak president, which doesn't prove to be true when you meet him in person, and a divided Congress, and a public which is increasingly drifting toward isolationism. Now, it's been said repeatedly that middle echelon people in government in Europe very much doubt that the American people, no matter what a president might say, would be willing to go along with commitment of troops and of weapons in any new conflict outside the United States. Have you heard any of this talk, and do you feel that is a true assessment?
There's a lot of questions. First of all, we have the problem of the institutions in a modern state and in a democratic state. I think we will never have ideal institutions. You can have them on paper, but they must work, and they must work with living people. So you have your institutional problems. A majority in Congress that's not, let me say, of the same tendency as the ideas of the president. We have problems in Belgium, we have a linguistic problem, as you know, and so on. And I think all over the world there is for the moment a very sharp problem with democratic institutions. How do they work, and are they adapted to present situations? That's the first one. Each country must solve that problem for itself, I think. Second question. I'm glad you are speaking of the personality of the president, because even in my country and in other countries, I hear more and more people saying, we need a strong man. You know, there are several meanings, several ideas about what does that mean, a strong man in politics. I am a little bit afraid of the expression, a strong man, because before the war, in the totalitarian systems, they were always looking for a strong man also, and we know now what that meant at that moment. But I think it was not in that sense that you were speaking of a strong man. Well, I remember being a student at that moment that when Harry Truman became president of the United States, in all the newspapers you can read that he was nothing extraordinary. Afterwards, he proved to be an excellent president of the United States, and he has taken decisions that others, maybe stronger men or men with a stronger reputation, would not have taken, I think. So I will give credit to the actual president of the United States. He has, excuse me for saying it in that way, to learn his job, and it's the most difficult that exists in the world, I think. It's far from an easy one. Well, I think with his open character, his open mind, and his very good advisors, he will do a good job. That's my opinion. Your third question was about the future, I think. Well, I think there is a political will in the United States and in several European states to have a better cooperation, to have a better understanding, to come closer to each other in order to have not a common policy in the European sense or in the sense of the European community, but to act on a common basis, I think. And as we saw already, problems are the same in modern industrialized countries. Well, we should do a bigger effort in order to find together solutions for this problem. I think it's the only issue. It's an operation of survival, and it's at the same time the best policy we can have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tinnemans. We appreciate so much your taking time out to visit with us in your very hectic schedule at the NATO Summit Conference here in Brussels. Thank you, sir. I want to once again thank the Prime Minister of Belgium, Mr. Leo Tinnemans, for that interview. I think all of you who read The Plain Truth know that usually always when we have an audio interview like this, either for the radio program or for television, we will give you a question and answer article in the current number of The Plain Truth. For many, many years, we on this program have been talking about an eventual third power bloc in the world, a coming United States of Europe, whatever it may be called. I think the answers to these questions are very significant. Not only those about Mr. Gerald Ford as a personality and how he has impressed European leaders during the NATO summit conference, but also particularly of the upcoming report by the Belgian Prime Minister to European leaders about the feasibility of a united Europe.
Europeans want to unite. They are sick and tired of having to be dragged into war because of the old warring spirit between various European factions. They know that their strength is in uniting. And they know that the vast industries of France, of Belgium, of Netherlands, of all of the other countries of the NATO nations, and primarily even other countries in Europe, though not necessarily a member of NATO, when you combine them all with their more than 250 million people, with at least two of the nations with nuclear power already, and other nations which could begin to build their own nuclear forces, they know that Europe must eventually decide its own destiny. I think you understand the reason behind some of my questions. Obviously, the soft underbelly of Europe is very vulnerable today. The United States' presence there in our Sixth Fleet is growing weaker. You have seen reports recently that the United States has lagged very dangerously in shipbuilding. As a matter of fact, many of the vessels in the United States Navy, which is very, very small in comparison with previous years, down to about 500 ships now, the smallest since 1939, and many of those ships are 22 and more years of age. We are now a smaller Navy than we were well before World War II. I've said years ago that we had drifted to about 15th or 17th in shipbuilding. And now we find that there have been fears by a chairman of the Sea Power Subcommittee of the House Armed Services Committee about this, whose name is Charles E. Bennett. And he has been saying that through that subcommittee's report, Congress immediately needs to enact a 5-year naval shipbuilding program to catch up with the Soviet Union. This is not lost on the European people who see growing Soviet presence not only in the Mediterranean, but now with the opening of the Suez Canal, even into the Indian Ocean. And we need to realize that the United States is lagging behind in many, many essential areas. The Europeans publicly believed Gerald Ford. They were impressed with President Ford. I think they do believe that the United States intends to fulfill its commitments to NATO. I think everyone wants to put Vietnam and the agony of Southeast Asia well behind them. But nevertheless, when it comes right down to it, Europe wants clearly to become a united force capable of determining its own destiny, speaking with one voice, and it does want a nuclear program. Now, if you want this interview that you have heard, this exclusive interview with the Prime Minister of Belgium, and in the context of these many other articles in the World's Overview publication, The Plain Truth, and while you're at it, request the booklet, The United States and the British Commonwealth in Prophecy. For literally more than two decades on the World Tomorrow program, we have been saying eventually a United States of Europe would come. In these interviews with leaders in Europe and elsewhere around the world, we're continually asking the questions that have to do with the forming and the shaping of global geopolitical policy as it heads toward the fulfillment of what Bible prophecy plainly shows is going to come to pass. You need a copy of this interview if you'd like to study what the Prime Minister said for yourself. It'll be in the upcoming number of The Plain Truth. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.